I'm going to start off with an admonition. I've heard this morning, roots do this, roots do that, roots do the other thing. Forget it. Roots are not just one thing. They are a minimum of four, maybe five. If you don't pay attention to which roots you're talking about, you're dead in the water. Okay, I've said it. I'll allude to it later, but not quite as strongly. This presentation is a little bit of a sensitivity analysis. It's how do we get to find out what a root system is, how it grows, what its component parts are, so that we can document these and use them in modeling, use them in physiological studies, in molecular studies. I've seen a lot of molecular studies recently that say this is what a root does. They don't know what they're talking about because they don't know what roots they're using. There are four major classes of root: taproot, basal root, lateral root, and the shoot-borne root. At any given point in time on any given plant root system, these four classes respond differently than each other to the same environmental constraint. Unless we understand those differences, we're dead in the water. In the talk, I will be showing root systems that are grown in aeroponics and what we call aeroponic scanning, mesorhizotrons, set up deliberately to do time-lapse photography of root growth, measure rate of growth, measure their response to point applications of gases or chemicals in the nutrient media. There will be roots that are coming from soil grown, and in one case, roots that were grown in auger. And you'll see some of these differences. In a seedling root system, you have lateral roots, taproot, and basal roots. Those are the three main aspects of a seedling root system. I don't care whether it's a dicot or a monocot, those are the three. What I'm using here and for most of this talk are clonal tillers. In other words, we took a seedling, we grew it up until it tillered, and then we separated the tillers out and we're growing clones and comparing clones, not comparing plants. Perennial ryegrass, majority of the cultivars are bulk bred, which means no two plants are identical. This all but proves that point. You have this one and this one that have two basal roots and a taproot. This one has a single basal root. This one, and that one have no basal roots. Genetically distinct. Every seedling is genetically distinct. If we want to understand the root system of a crop like this, we have to use clonal material where every individual is identical to every other individual within that clone. Here we see lateral roots, we see shoot-borne roots. Now, in what I call a semi-mature, meaning a very much older root system, set of root systems, we get indeterminate lateral roots, we get long determinate lateral roots, short determinate lateral roots. Now we know these are determinate because we've watched them grow. We took a picture every day for 30 days, 40 days, we watched them grow. They grow for 5 days, 6 days, and then stop growing. That's the determinant ones. The indeterminate ones just keep right on growing. Then I've thrown in a new thing here, what I call dominant laterals. I use Max PC mice are a pain. Right here is a lateral root that's forming the same time as the other lateral roots, but it's very different. Over here is another one forming at the same time, but it's very different. In the next frame, here's the one that formed over here. Here it is growing out and along. It's what I call a dominant lateral. It's got laterals coming off of it. This other one I pointed to, here it comes down. It also has secondary laterals coming from it. These things appear to develop spontaneously. We need to do more research on them. We don't know what the control factors are, but they are a very important aspect of the development of the root system in the truly mature plant in the soil. Just another aside here. Vascular system with phloem fibers. Talk about the potential for carbon sequestration. These things are going to break down much more slowly. In this particular root, you can see Aurinkema. This root was grown in 0.5% auger. It felt it had too much water, so it developed Aurinkema. Perennial ryegrass, like most grasses, is facultative for the ability to form Aurinkema. But if you look at another line, notice the Aurinkema are not as fully developed. So a differential response between these two clones. The lateral roots. The lateral roots on these are just over a millimeter, a tenth of a millimeter in diameter. They have a endodermis, but no pericycle. This is from one of the clones that has determinant lateral roots. The determinant lateral roots cannot branch. They don't have their own laterals. There's a lot of data here. This data was produced using a microscope on soil-grown roots to measure diameters. We used the ASMs, aeroponic scanning mesorhizotrons, to measure the growth rates. We're able to characterize numbers of shoot-borne roots per plant, diameters, numbers of laterals, the frequency of laterals per centimeter of root, secondary laterals. Notice the difference in the diameters. 0.4 millimeters for the shoot-borne roots, 0.12 millimeters for the laterals, 0.08, 0.09 millimeters for the secondary laterals. The LSDs are exceedingly small because we're using clonal material, therefore they're extremely uniform. One of the things that you get when you use like we've seen in several of the previous talks, where you dig up roots, wash the roots off, scan them, and then run wind rise over something else to figure out what the root length density is, what the roots are there. You get a root length by diameter class distribution shaped like this. It's flat at the back because there is an absolute minimum root size of 0.05 millimeters, and that then generates this shape of a curve. It's typically called extreme value model because it does demonstrate that there is an extreme value. There is no value below 0.05 millimeters. Now, I was talking about different sizes for the different classes of root. You don't see any of that in this. With us classical methods, we cannot tell anything about the makeup of the root system. If, however, you take much smaller pictures of a smaller part of that root system, you get a different story. This is a set of four images taken with our, what we call the XYZ imager. It's a dissecting scope attached to a digital camera on a computer-controlled XYZ movement table system so that we can get, this is 5,000 dots per inch, the images that we're taking this data from. We can get resolutions from 5,000 dots per inch to 25,000 dots per inch, which you can't do with any scanner. But this, we took a one root system from that previous plot. Now we have 117 images, non-overlapping, and it tells us a different story. Here we have peaks representing the shoot-borne roots, a peak representing one of the dominant laterals, the peak for classical laterals, the peak for the secondary laterals. They're all there. This is one of those images. If you treat it with nonlinear regression, the best model, a correlation of 0.97 or better, is a three-peak model that exactly represents this normal distribution underneath those curves. This data, what I showed you before, indicate that a plant root system is made up of a series of normal distributions around a mean for a given root and is not made up of a continuous distribution of root diameters. From using this kind of model, we can characterize that image in nine numbers. I can reproduce that image from those nine numbers. Peak height, mean, and standard deviation. I moved a little faster than I had planned, but the key point is combining time-lapse photography with high-resolution, small portions of the root system being imaged, using all the other classical techniques, we can far better understand exactly what the makeup of a root system is in terms of what are the different types of roots and where are they. Perennial ryegrass has five distinct classes. Only four of those fit with the nomenclature that the ISRR wants us to use. The fifth one, dominant lateral, we are beginning to do some work on. We have a lot of images so that we will be able to do further work with those images. One of the strongest points that I want to make is actually twofold. Root systems are not a continuous distribution of diameters. It's overlapping distributions of diameters. And those overlapping distributions are of different classes of root, which do very different things in terms of their physiology, in terms of their response to the physical and chemical environment, and in terms of nutrient uptake. We've demonstrated that all four of those main types even take up nitrogen differently than each other on the same plant. I'll stop there.
time for questions. Thanks, Rich. Questions?
Jonathan.
Rich, your statement here is very reasonable for monocots, because you don't have no secondary growth. So you make a root and it stays that diameter indefinitely. But as you know, in dicots now, you have thickening over time. So I'm wondering if you would modify this statement in the case of the dicot.
Absolutely not.
Well, I mean, if you get one root that's getting thicker over time, then you're going to have more of it. Were you thinking the density of the agents are going to get bigger?
That's right. But you'll notice that not all the shoot-borne roots were the same diameter. As in corn, the first node has small nodal roots come off. The next node, they're a little larger. Next node, they're a little larger. This is the way the grasses get around the inability to have secondary thickening. They start out with bigger roots. No, my reaction is, with the exception of the benefit that dicots have of being able to grow thicker roots, therefore fewer large roots, therefore a fair conservation in carbon cost, there's no difference. Everything else is the same between monocots and dicots. You have to look at them in exactly the same way. Remember, the active part of the root system are those small laterals, secondary laterals, and in plants with bigger roots, tertiary and quaternary lateral roots. That's where all the activity is. That's where the water's taken up. The big roots, that's the plumbing system. That's how they get the water to the top of the plant.
Other questions? Yes.
There was a clone that you showed one of your earliest slides. I think it was number 92, which appeared to have a dramatically broader, wider diameter taproot and basal root. Can you pick those out based upon the selections you're using?
Yes. And to some extent, what we did is we picked out seedlings that we thought were interesting. And it turns out none of the seedling characteristics showed up in the clones. So the lateral root patterns from the seedlings are not duplicated with the lateral root patterns in the clones. Now remember, the lateral roots on the clones are coming off of shoot-borne roots. The lateral roots in the seedlings are coming off of basal roots and tap roots. And basal roots and tap roots do things differently than the shoot-borne roots. We can see this in corn, but people have written it off as variation. The differences between these clones are in root diameter, both the shoot-borne roots and the lateral roots, the length of time that the roots grow, the lateral roots, the speed with which the shoot-borne roots grow, the distance behind the tip where the lateral roots first emerge. These clones differ in all these characteristics.
And so if you have a whole population of clones and you merge them all together, what does the population of roots evolve into?
Mix them all together how?
Well, they're growing in a swath.
Yep. Take them out and stick them in the ground and
I'm just saying, if you were to go out and sample the way you talked about digging up a root system and measured it, you'd have roots from many different clones.
Absolutely.
So with that population, if you had enough different means, would it all run together as one population?
The
continuous distribution?
The analysis would show it as one continuous distribution, unless you took a much closer look. In terms of things like root length density, looking at water uptake, that is independent of some of the things I've been saying, because that's really just looking at the total population of the finest roots. That's the important part in that context. If you go out and look at a population of perennial ryegrass seedlings or any of, for the most part, any of the forage seedlings, you will see that no two are the same, and if you're taking cores and looking at it, it doesn't make any difference. But in terms of breeding, in terms of understanding the physiology, in terms of crop improvement, in terms of figuring out what is going on genetically, molecularly, you have to keep it distinct.
Ken,
a short comment and then question. I guess your point about seedlings not being the same as a tiller would kind of blow up all the molecular geneticists that want to screen.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
My question really has to do
It's very scary. Yeah. That's my point.
Your evidence for nitrogen uptake differences, how does that work? What do you see?
What we did is we used vibrating microelectrodes, and we had a population of tomato roots, of basal roots, lateral roots, tap roots, and we saw very different uptake patterns. The basal roots and the tap root, until they shut down nutrient uptake, took up nutrients uniformly along their length. The lateral roots took up nutrients only in the apical half centimeter, with no nutrient uptake basal to that. Now, this is in tomato, the standard system that Leon Cochin and his group use up at Cornell. Just one piece of that story.
So which chemicals contribute to the nutrient uptake more than urine?
Which roots take up more nutrient?
Yeah.
As far as the shoot is concerned, the finest laterals.
So lateral from which root?
That's a very good question. We don't know. We have no evidence to say that a lateral from a basal root acts differently than a lateral from a shoot-borne root. If they do act differently, then we worry about it.
You know that usually basal roots generate early and the other roots later, right?
Right.
So the lateral roots from basal roots push on early, but then later on stop, grow.
Let me explain this from a different direction. The basal roots on a corn plant live for the full life of the plant. The lateral roots, the finest lateral roots, these secondary laterals, they only live 14 days, and then they die, and they're replaced by another one. So these basal roots still have functioning lateral roots on them that are less than 14 days old. So unless we demonstrate that a lateral root on a basal root is different than a lateral root on a shoot-borne root, we have to assume they're equivalent, and one's not more important than the other. Shoot-borne crown roots, yeah.
Yeah. So if the lateral root from crown roots, you think eventually will replace the but have more function than the lateral roots from the basal root?
That they will have more function?
Yeah, just wondering. So you said the crown will be more and more.
Well, there's more of them, yes. Just population activities, yeah.
Well, thank you. I know we have other questions probably. Rich will be around for a while. We'll get on to our next speaker.
Yeah. And thank you very much. They'll tie me down.